Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 109 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcast streaming services. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, please rate and review our podcast on whichever platform you use to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us yet. And now for this week's second podcast. Earlier this week, I brought you the first part of this special episode that is celebrating the successful run of Kinky Boots at London's Adelphi Theatre. Kinky Boots is a show that we have followed since its opening on September 15th. How can I forget that? It's my birthday, 2015, which is way after the year I was born. And all of us at Curtain Call have enjoyed seeing its run extended again and again. But alas, all good things must come to an end, as Chaucer once stated, I'm paraphrasing him, and Kinky Boots will be hanging up its sexy heels next Saturday, the 12th of January, 2019. In Tuesday's episode, Simon Anthony Roden and Oliver Thompson talked about their experiences of Kinky Boots the first time around and what it means to be playing in such a loved and socially important show. In this episode, we dig a little deeper and get a little more personal as the boys relate how close to their hearts the show has grown, how important they believe the show's message is, and what they will individually take away from their time in Kinky Boots. Have a listen.
Unfortunately, the show is coming to an end.
Yes.
Not
yes.
Only here at this theater.
Absolutely, yeah.
We were just talking to you before we pressed record about the message that this show brings, mm-hmm. and how important do you think it has been to have this show on the Strand, at the heart of the West End?
Massively important. I think a story like this, a topic like this, an image like this is so important, because I think a lot of the time I've got even friends as well as, like, you know, people that come and see the show who say, oh, I weren't going to bother seeing that, but after I saw it, I think it was really good. You were really good. And it's a really good message. This show really brilliantly articulates why we should be allowed to be ourselves, especially if we aren't harming anybody else.
So
I think it's fantastically important that it be on the West End, and, like, you know, obviously I'll be out of a job, but I would love this show to be in the West End long after I've done it, do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because, as I say, like, you know, this generations of people that will benefit from hearing this story and seeing that there are people just like them in the world, you know
yeah.
what I mean? And hopefully you don't have to suffer alone, essentially.
Yeah.
It is on tour at the moment, actually, and Kayushe has just taken over the lead role in Edinburgh, which is fantastic, and that's important because at least the country gets to see the story and hear the message.
Yeah. People may kind of choose to go to a theatre, they subscribe to a theatre and they get their tickets because they're patrons, and then but they choose to go to a show that they may not have chosen, but go and come out thinking, I wasn't expecting that. Yeah. I mean, their girlfriends have brought them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the message I don't think that the dons of this world are the dangerous mindsets that we have to worry about. Maybe it is a bit more upfront and out there and aggressive, and they will say quite confidently that maybe they men wearing women's clothes or whatever that. But the thing is that from what's been interesting from my sort of journey and from learning, and also from people who are maybe similar to me who've been to see the show and stuff, is the Charlie Prices of the world, where there's a sort of underlying prejudice that they're actually fine with. They actually say, oh, I'm fine with, I have, you know, the people who say, oh, I've got best friends who are gay, kind of thing. But at the same time, and I will admit to myself, I was brought up in a society. I remember in my hometown, there was a man who used to wear ladies' clothes and used to walk around. And me and my friends, who were skater boys, we would snigger at him.
Yeah.
And when I saw this show, and it made me feel physically very, very sick about how I grew up. And not because of my parents or not because of anything, just because of society, I think. Maybe just, and it made me think very deep, very seriously about how I should react now, and how I'd never approached it until I'd seen the show.
Yeah,
I obviously moved to London and was in theatre, so had quite a liberal outlook on life, and had my prejudices were not really. I had no problem with homophobia or anything like that. But there was still this thing about, yes, when I grew up, I sniggered at a gentleman wearing women's clothes, which I'm very, very embarrassed about, and that I can say I don't have that attitude at all now. And they're the people that I think, they're the ones, that's the people that you need to change the minds of. You need to, because they will come along and see the show, and they will sit there, and some, like you say, the dons of the world, you'll see them at the beginning be not happy about this, and by the end they're like, yeah, the Charlie Prices of the world will sit there, and they'll go along, and they'll go, oh, this is fun, isn't it? And then they'll go away and they'll go, oh, the drag queen. They won't really approach it themselves. Some of them will, some of them won't, and that's where there's still room and a place for a story like this in our society, and it needs to keep growing and keep, like you say, on tour. It's reaching more people and stuff, and I think there will be more shows like this. I mean, we started off with the Billy Elliots, where you have a boy dancing, and then you have this show, and then sort of the Jamie. Everyone's talking about Jamie sort of bridges the gap between Kinky Boots and Billy Elliot. And before you know it, it's going to get broader, and we're going to have a wider spectrum of shows for people, because everybody should be catered for in every medium of entertainment. And I think theatre can lead the way and can push boundaries so that TV and film can feel more confident, and vice versa. Yeah. But it fundamentally just comes from just keep on putting stories like this out there in front of people's faces, and they'll just and you learn about your own prejudices and your own beliefs and how you've looked at things. And so for me, it's been really powerful, but it's good because I can kind of use that on stage every night. Not that it's how I feel now, but when I have the monologue at the end where I'm apologising to Lola, I feel horrible, because also I've laid into Simon, my mate, who's standing there dressed as this beautiful woman. I've laid into him, and we go for it. We go for it, and we have to bring some sense of truth and honesty to it for it to hit home for the audience. And afterwards, I stand there doing that monologue, and in the audience, I know there's going to be a lot of people who have been made to feel like they're not a man, or what have you. And that is heart-wrenching, because nobody should have to feel like that in this day and age. But it only happens by broadening people's outlook on things.
Can you feel that coming from the audience as well? Every time I've seen it, there have been audible reactions.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, sometimes we do have audible reactions, but I think also it's the non-audible. So especially in that confrontation scene that Ollie's referring to, it's silent. You could hear a pin drop, and that's when you know that they're listening and that you've got them, and they're invested in both sides of the story, and that's what's equally as important. But 100%, people are totally behind, we really take them on a journey, and that's why at the end of the show they are on their feet, and they're celebrating with us, because it is a celebration by the end of it.
So
They need to. They have to. At some point, they have to. They need to feel disappointed in me, disappointed in Charlie, and not hate me. Yeah. But at the same time, what I think Simon does brilliantly is that no one feels sorry for him by the end.
Yeah,
it's like there's that moment where what comes with the anger towards Charlie and the disappointment in Charlie and stuff, there is obviously a little bit of feeling sorry for Lola, but then by the time she comes back out, that's the empowering thing. That's the thing that leaves the people who would be the Charlie Prices and the Dons are kind of like going, oh, hold on, he was a proper I'm like maybe I should have a think about how I would be. And then but at the end, her coming out feeling so strong, and so it empowers everyone in the audience, including the Dons and the Charlie Prices. They feel empowered. They go, "I've learned something." And that, but like you say, that so the inaudible bit, the science bit, is horrible because on one or two occasions, I felt I've lost the audience a little bit. Where if I push it too far, by the end of Soul of a Man, they're like, "Good." I hope you feel bad, but they should feel like, okay.
I mean, he sings that song, like, his voice is ridiculously, like, it's just so powerful. And I can't imagine that they'd ever feel anything except for, you know, glory and adulation, really. But I'm sure that
they need
must
you need to show that you're in pain. You're going through punishment. Yeah.
Exactly, take it low. Just two more questions, guys, if that's right.
Broadway
production's also closing. You know, and but there is a tour, you know, on in the States, and it's going here. The tour is here and into next year. And you've already talked about how important it is to regional theaters, and I think in America as well, it's really important to get this place, you know, get the show into Texas and Florida, and absolutely. You know, especially when things like happened in Orlando, you know, and that I know that Kiki went to the Dr. Phillips Center, but. How important is Kinky Boots' legacy, not just to this camp, but to musical theater in general? You touched upon it, saying there's been some bridges, but what do you see is Kinky's legacy in the kind of the canon of new contemporary musical theater?
For me personally, like, I'm not a massive fan of musicals generally, unfortunately. And I love the stories and I love the period, but I'm not a massive fan of it. Like, I definitely appreciate, you know, different genres of music and stuff. And I think for me, the music is one. Like, I guess Cyndi Lauper even said it as well. Like, she doesn't like musicals. And I think she doesn't necessarily like the archetype of what musicals meant prior to, I don't know, you know, the early 2000s to now sort of thing. And I think her music and music like hers, for me, I think just for me as a person, it resonates more with me. Do you know what I mean? I think it comes from a place, the contemporary sound comes from a place that I understand and I recognise. And so from that point of view, I think that this show's legacy is the contemporaryness of it all, I think.
I think musicals are at their best when they're dealing with subject matter and people who live on the edge of society. So I think it's the underdogs, be it the underdogs or be it the people who are not accepted and stuff like that. So I as far as legacy, I think this has pushed the boundary. It'd be interesting to see how far it goes next. But these steps need to happen. If we suddenly just went all out, if you go too far too soon, sadly, you alienate a big portion of your audience and you don't reach as many people. So these stepping stones need to happen. So hopefully its legacy is just that it pushes another story to be told that's even bolder and even braver. That makes another minority feeling very included and accepted in the world of theatre and just generally the world, not just theatre, just in every
the world.
The drag queens, the transvestites and stuff like that, it's as much as it has an air of, it is theatrical, it's life for them. It's a choice, it's a way of life. It's not that they do it to dress up for a show like we are here. And I think that's what this show kind of touches upon. Even though it has to glamorise it for a musical and stuff, it does touch upon the fact that, you know, we're gonna wear this. He's gonna turn up to a factory. You know? He'll do his cabaret nightclub, but he'll also turn up to the factory.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I mean, that's what's so funny, actually. Sorry, just to make a point of the idea and the glamorized version of what we put on stage is that people actually live like this, like Lola, like the angels, like the bad drags that we have in our Land of Lola cabaret bar. And what I find really funny is that whenever I go out of the theatre in the get-up because I've got a second show to do, I get those sneers and those sniggers that happen. But I know that I've got the comfort in the fact that I'm doing a show and I don't actually do this. But there are people that feel most comfortable wearing those those pieces of clothing and wearing that makeup. And it's because we're in central London, I guess sometimes it's kind of accepted and they kind of like it. And it's very nice makeup that's done by our fantastic wigs and wardrobe makeup department. But at the same time, like people's opinions need to change because, again, like I do get, which I don't really mind, but like people stare and they snigger sometimes, and it's just a bit like, wow, like we've got a long way to go still.
Two sentences about what you guys have the fantastic. It's an opportunity. The show's closing. You have the opportunity to close a very, very successful run of a very, very successful show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What would you personally take away from your time here at the Adelphi?
I have used a lot of stuff that's been going on in my own life, just from getting older and being an actor like many actors out there who live with anxiety and depression and stuff. And I've for the first time really felt like I've been able to apply those experiences into a show, into a role. Because what Charlie Price has to deal with is the grief, which, you know, like I've experienced, is can be a massive trigger for anxiety and depression and feeling like a failure. I think there are moments in the show that I've felt like I've really felt like I've completely lost myself as an actor. I mean, I feel like I'm not aware of what I'm doing. Mm. If you know what I mean, I feel like I've learned a lot dramatically from this show, just because it's just a lot deeper than the other shows that I've done. And some of the stuff I talked about stuff growing up and having the prejudices I've had to deal with. But I've learned to apply that to my performance, and it's something that I'm very proud of. And when you grow as a person and as an actor, I think that's when you're happiest, when you feel a sense of pride about what you're doing. And I think that's what I will always remember from Kinky Boots is how proud I am that the stuff that I've had to overcome to step back out on stage and be brave enough to share some of what's going on in my heart with an audience, rather than having to put it in a box whilst doing Fiero and Wicked, or whilst doing a rock show, or whilst playing Sky Masterson and Guys and Dolls, which is the shows I've done in the past. Yeah. Now it's been very much like, no, I'm going to put some of me into this. Yeah. And whether they get it, whether they know or not that it is me putting some of it in there, or they think I'm just doing a good job acting, it doesn't matter to me. It's the fact that I've been brave enough to use that.
Absolutely.
I think for me, what I'll take away from this show is, I guess, the message that it sends. Because as I said, like growing up in our society, I never thought that a story like this... I guess there are small fractions of society where you are accepted in, you know, that small bubble. And I think the fact that this is such a major scale message tells me that reinforces my belief in myself, essentially. Along with that, I'll hopefully go into more jobs with the same attitude and hopefully change more minds. I think the story that we tell in this is important, and I feel so lucky to do so. And that's not always necessarily the case with particular acting roles that you do. But I do hope that I will go along the line of work of being able to tell stories that matter, because sometimes it's nice to just, you know, see a fairy tale, essentially, because every, you know, life is hard within itself. Yeah. But it's also interesting to sort of like tell stories that matter. So I think that's something that I'll definitely take away, especially on a commercial scale.
Brilliant, Simon Holland, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the run.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Simon Anthony Roden and Oliver Thompson there. the final pairing of Lola and Charlie in the multi-award-winning Kinky Boots at the Adelphi Theatre in London. Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast, just get in touch with us by any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com, and that is John with an H. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Simon and Ollie and the entire cast and company of Kinky Boots, past and present. Congratulations on a massively successful run. Well done, everyone. Enjoy your last few shows. And all of us at Curtain Call wish you the best for your next jobs, your entire career. Beyond, you all deserve it. And break legs to the UK tour as it continues to wow audiences around the country. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.